Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the NASM CPT. My name is Eddie Lester, here to take you through chapter 13 in the 5th edition textbook. Specifically, we're going over the PowerPoint lecture. So let's look at this chapter. It's going to be all about the power phase of training and how to apply that when working with clients. So specifically, the power phase, you know, it's not too frequently asked on the test per se, especially aside from that stabilization and strength endurance phases, as that's what NASM typically thinks that you'll be working with more often than power-based clients. But definitely there's a few test questions here around the acute variables, maybe around the adaptations it promotes. So let's go ahead and go through and talk a little bit more about it. Let's move over to slide 2 and specifically go over the goals of the power phase of training. So first goal is going to be the increase rate of force production. And that's the main one I want you guys to associate with the power phase, is this rate of force production, because basically that's what power is. It's accelerating an object as fast as possible, more or less, or using force to accelerate that object. And the faster that object accelerates over a shorter amount of time is an increase in power. So increased rate of force production. Okay. Next thing to enhance neuromuscular efficiency, specifically around firing muscles and allowing muscles to work together to fire to promote optimal power. Also to enhance prime mover strength along with the maximal strength training phase. In power, you do some heavy lifting as well. So enhancing prime mover strength is a goal as well. And improve in strength, stability, and anaerobic power. Specifically, most power work is done anaerobically, meaning without oxygen, as you're doing maximal efforts and not tons of reps. So it does end up being more anaerobic. And then the recovery can be aerobic to replenish all that ATP, especially if you're doing like a heavy, intense workout for sure. All right, and then also power does reduce the risk of ACL injuries. So that's also good, especially around athletes, the more that they perform in all planes of motion with effective power and neuromuscular efficiency and balance and stability, the less likely that they will be to get an ACL injury. So moving over to slide 3, some of the scientific principles of power. One of the main ones is going to be the force velocity curve. And the force velocity curve is basically just going to relate to that if you have, or it's the curve basically that describes that if you have something that requires a lot of force, like a heavier object, the speed at which you can move that object will not be as high, or the velocity in which that object moves will not be as high. It's like trying to get a train to come to start and go, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, compared to something really light like a Ferrari or something, a sports car, to go 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. Train, not very likely, because it requires a lot more force. Therefore, the velocity of acceleration is going to be a little bit slower, assuming that the same force is applied, more or less. But to read it, it says describes the inverse relationship between the force produced by the muscle and the speed of the muscle contraction. Meaning, if you have to lift a 50-pound object in a bicep curl, you're probably not going to be able to move that as fast as a 5-pound object. Hopefully, that kind of makes sense. Basically, higher force equals lower velocity, and vice versa. Lower force equals higher velocity that you can move something with. Next is the size principle, and specifically, this is going to focus on force and power production are maximized by increasing the number of motor units recruited, as well as the frequency of the motor unit firing. Meaning that when you're, we'll say, using muscle, you want to be able to use the maximal amount of motor units will produce the most force, and the number of times that those motor units fire will increase the force as well. And then also we have Henneman's principle, which is going to be motor units which are under load are recruited from smallest to largest, meaning that if you have a 5-pound object, you aren't going to be using the largest muscle fibers in that muscle to lift that. You're typically going to start with the smallest muscle fibers, and then as that object gets heavier, you start to recruit more and more and more and more muscle fibers, but from smallest to largest. Meaning that if you're lifting light weight, you typically aren't working out the large muscle fibers. That's more for the heavier weight. So that's why when you do heavy lifting, you may notice an increase in muscle size more quickly than when you're doing lightweight for higher reps. And that's because when large muscle fibers grow, that's more apparent. They grow, the larger fibers are growing, therefore those are growing larger. You can see those a lot more faster than when smaller muscle fibers grow, because those are not too big. When they grow, you can't see as noticeable of a difference. Fun facts with Eddie. Here we go. Roles of the proprioceptors in power production. So a good thing about having our proprioceptors is that we can utilize them to produce more force. Specifically, the increased stretch reflex or excitability basically leads to greater power development. What that means is that when we sense a muscle stretching when we're going to do a box jump, when we're lowering, our muscles are stretching, we sense that, and our muscles want to say, hey, don't go too low, or don't stretch me too much. So we actually get a nervous system signal that is sent to the spinal cord and brain that tells us that we're building up a stretch, and that stretch wants to go back the other way, increasing power. This is like the in plyometric training, when we see the basically the lengthening to shortening transition, where that amortization phase is, that combo of lengthening to shortening, we have the fascia within the muscle stretches and wants, like a rubber band, to snap back the other way, and that produces more force, which is great. This is also why if you wanted to target the muscle further, adding a pause, or we'll say if you add a pause to your training, it targets the muscle fibers more because you use less stretch reflex, which is more nervous system activation and less effort for the muscle. So that's why doing something like a really quick, like bouncy type movement does not use as much muscle fiber as much as it uses the elastic properties of the muscle to bounce you back the other way. This is why people like in a bench press, maybe kind of going quickly down and pushing back up, maybe even a little bounce off the chest, they can lift more weight doing that than pausing at the bottom and trying to go back up, because you do get that stretch reflex. But that's what power is about, is utilizing that stretch reflex to increase your power, which is good. And then also improve muscle spindles' response to a rapid stretch. The muscle spindles are the nerve or the sensory receptor that is going to sense the stretch and say, hey, we don't like this. So the more sensitive those are, and the more that they tell the muscle to shorten, there's going to be a lot more force that's able to be produced from that. So know that the muscle spindles sense that stretch and they assist in this power production. All right, moving over to slide 4, tracking progress. There's a few assessments, or there's a lot of assessments for power, and all of these, I kind of say, depend on the sport that the person plays. Okay, so I surf, I play volleyball, are my two main sports, a little bit of golf here and there. So for each of those sports, there's going to be a different set of assessments that I would want to be assessed to gauge on, you know, my performance in those sports. And they're all different sports, so it's hard to say, like, oh, you have to do the 40-yard dash to determine how good they are at golf. Well, that doesn't really transfer over. You have to do the 40-yard dash for surfing. Well, that completely doesn't transfer over, just like golf. And volleyball, you might have a little bit of transference, but not too much. But a vertical jump test for volleyball, very important. A vertical jump test for surfing does have a little bit of transference, because you do have a pushing, or almost like a jumping style, on your surfboard when you're pushing through turns. So there is certain assessments that you would want to do based on the sports that the person plays. Keep that in mind, because you don't need your golf clients to be doing 40-yard dashes, but you may want them to do a rotational flexibility test. But performance assessments, yeah, maybe like depending on the sport, definitely like a 40-yard dash would be important for football. A 40-yard dash would be important for soccer, even for baseball. So keep that in mind. Most sports do transfer. Most land sports do transfer a lot in these performance assessments. The T-test, the shuttle runs, a bunch of different types of things can test for performance. You just have to make sure you create or choose the right ones for the client, type of client that you have. All right, next we have subjective reports. Basically, just when you are like kind of tracking your progress in with your clients, you know, how are they feeling when they're performing sports? Are they feeling more agile or more powerful as they're playing the sports that they like? That's a good way to track if they're doing better. And a lot of times when I focus on a power phase and then I go play volleyball, I notice I am jumping higher and am being a lot more explosive out of the sand, so beach volleyball specifically. And that really makes me excited. And that's why I train for that when I know summer's coming around, because I don't often play in the winter too much. But yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to page or slide number 5. So problems due to avoiding or rushing the power phase. So the power phase is not 100% necessary for most clients, and probably not that great for most clients. You know, if you are interested in some weight loss and you want to mix up programming a little bit, you can jump in the power phase, but don't go overboard. Don't get too crazy if the person's not ready for that. So let's just talk about some of the power phase problems, we'll say. So rushing into the power phase leads to possible injury. Okay, doing a one rep max deadlift followed by box jumps may not be appropriate for all clients. Keep that in mind. Possible failure execution of exercises, and then the frustration or inability to perform those exercises, basically during that failure sort of thing. So, you know, an over or a power clean or a snatch in Olympic lifting might seem great for an athlete that's been doing it, but if you have a brand new client that's never done anything like that, you don't need to rush into something like that difficult. And then avoiding the power phase, if you're an athlete, you have to be hitting the power phase here and there. You know, depending on what sport you're in and what the season looks like, the power phase is going to be really important to kind of lead up to that season and make sure that you are as in athletic, agility-based, explosive shape as possible. So you're missing out on benefits such as bone density, heavy lifting, and you know, max efforts in jumping and running and sprinting and cutting. And explosiveness does build bone density. Other adaptations to muscles, tendons, and the neuromuscular system occur that you could miss out on. And also enjoyable changes in regular programming, in the sense that power training is pretty dang fun. So if someone's an old athlete, you know, getting them in there and having them do some ice skaters or some you know, sprints and or heavy lifting can be really fun. And that's, you know, a lot of people, especially males that are athletic and females that are athletic or have been athletes, would love that. So keep that in mind. All right, moving to slide number 6, criteria to participate in and benefit from power phase. You need to have core and joint stability, a good strength base, meaning you've done some other training before, optimal range of motion. That's going to be something that I'm going to push really big. Especially training for the sports that I train for, range of motion is really important in golf, surfing, and volleyball as well. And pretty much every sport having a good range of motion around the main joints that are active during those sports. So yeah, hips and ankles, big time, knees. Knees obviously don't often get too limiting from the range of motion, because it only has flexion and extension, but the shoulders for certain sports like volleyball is important, shoulders for baseball and throwing, shoulders in paddling for surfing, and then also a good squat assessment and good neuromuscular control. The good squat assessment without much or without many muscle imbalances. You don't want muscle imbalances. But if you do have them, remember, you always need to be working on correcting those. So corrective flexibility is always something to incorporate with every phase if you do have muscle imbalances. All right, other benefits for the power phase are going to be increased muscular power and strength, improved bone health. We kind of talked about that. Reduces the effects of aging. So a lot when we age, we typically lose muscle and we lose flexibility, and we get kind of we'll just call it the normal things of out of shape. When you do power training, you legitimately can feel younger. I know some guys that were 30 and starting to have some issues with pain and not being able to surf or do the sports that they love. And when they started training, either with me or outside, or had me do their programming, they really were able to gain a lot of youth in their power and explosiveness back, for sure. Also, yeah, improved sports performance. That's pretty much the main reason why you would do the power phase, unless you just want to do it for fun. But yeah, jumping, sprinting, agility, endurance, running, everything can benefit from the power phase as far as sports go. Injury prevention and also improved treatment outcomes. All right, so let's move on to slide number 7. So cardiorespiratory training for the power phase. So how should you kind of train with cardio around the power phase? So you can progress someone based on their ability to handle high intensity exercise. So typically you're doing interval workouts, and there's some samples of intervals in the book as well as right here on the slide, which 15-second workout intervals, you can do a 3-to-1 ratio, which is like sprinting for, let's say we're on a treadmill, sprinting for 15 seconds as hard as you can, and then resting for 45 seconds. That's a 3-to-1 ratio. That's for beginners. Then maybe sprinting for a 2-to-1 ratio of 15 seconds on, 30 seconds off. That's really, really tough. Doing sprinting as hard as you can and then taking a 30-second break is not too much time for recovery, so it can be really tough. You know, maybe only 5 to 10 sprints could just completely exhaust you. Good idea for maybe if you have an athletic client that wants to be exhausted at the end of a workout, and you throw that in there, definitely. And then also working with 30-second intervals, and all of these 15, 30, or 60-second intervals depend on what we'll say the sport that they're trying to be better at, typically what type of length of explosiveness do they need. You know, we'll say for 15 seconds that might match something like volleyball, or might match something like football, even a little bit shorter times, because most time in football the plays last less than 10 seconds. So trying to push that really hard for 15 seconds and take a break might apply to football. You know, soccer might be more towards that 60-second interval where we're going really hard for 60 seconds and then the ball leaves you. So, you know, depending on the sport and how long the activity period is per play of each sport, like basketball might be more 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds, depending if there's a few plays in a row that go back to back, or longer even. So you can mix up with these ratios and with power phase, but yeah, it's basically like really, really high intensity workout for the on portion, and the rest should be 3-to-1, 2-to-1s. It's not too often you get to 1-to-1s, but just know that they can't go as hard for 60 seconds and then rest for 60 seconds, but definitely possible, and especially at elite level athletics. All right, moving to slide number 8, movement preparation in the power phase. Remember, guys, before every workout, there should be some attempt at a little foam roll and a stretch, or some activation of the muscles that you're going to be using. So SMR and flexibility, what is used in the power phase? It's foam rolling, or self-myofascial release, and dynamic stretching. If they have muscle imbalances, still go with static stretching, but if they do not and they're ready, pretty flexible and ready to go, they can use dynamic stretching to warm up the body. Some dynamic stretches that NASM does recommend would be something like the prisoner squat, multiplanar lunges, single leg squat touchdown, tube walking, or a medicine ball lift and chop. Things like that can be done to kind of warm up the body in its entirety. All right, and then if muscle imbalances are present, always perform corrective flexibility, something that I mainly emphasize. NASM would recommend that as well, no matter what. If they have muscle imbalances, you should always be working towards corrective flexibility. All right, over to slide number 9, continue with movement preparation. So the acute variables associated with foam rolling, 0-2 sets, 30-60-second hold, 3-7 days per week, four weeks in duration. Select 3 muscles that you're going to be using, or the muscles that are tight. Always foam roll the muscles that are overactive. Okay, and then dynamic stretching, 10 to 15 reps, 0-2 sets. The reason why there's zero is because if you have a really intense workout, you don't necessarily have to do dynamic stretching, because you'll save some juice for that workout. Then you have the controlled tempo with that, 3-7 days per week, four week durations, 3-10 exercises. All those acute variables are more or less just getting you to say, just do some foam rolling, do some dynamic stretching before you work out. You don't have to follow these to a T, but that's just some samples that NASM gives you to kind of give you an idea of what to do. But as you get more comfortable in personal training, you'll understand that you can kind of do more than that, do less than that, or for each client, it'll be individualized as far as what they need to do. All right, moving over to slide 10, core training for power. All right, so some exercises for core training for power. Remember, we want to make sure that we understand the difference between core power exercise, core strength exercise, and core stabilization exercises. Power exercises for the core typically involve throwing a medicine ball. Obviously done in a safe space with a trainer against a wall. But the rotation chest pass, that's using the obliques to really rotate and throw with the chest. Medicine ball pullover throw, also a medicine ball slam, a soccer throw. And then a front medicine ball oblique throw. That's going to be a rotational power exercise in which you have the arms kind of at your side with the ball, and you rotate using your obliques to throw that. It's a little bit different than the rotation chest pass, because the chest pass, you push the ball. In the front medicine ball oblique throw, you whip the ball with your arms more straight, we'll say. Acute variables for core training in the power, very similar to the rest of the phases, but 8 to 12 reps, 2 to 3 sets, 0 to 6 second rest, 2 to 4 days per week, 4 weeks in duration, and 0 to 2 for core power. Remember, if you don't want to do core training because it'll exhaust you for the workout to come, you don't have to do it. That's the main point behind the 0 there. All right, moving to slide 11, balance for power phase exercises. Exercises for balanced power. Balanced power is basically just single leg jumping. That's the way that I would explain it. Multiplanar single leg box hop up, multiplanar single leg proprioceptive plyometrics, a long name for basically just saying jumping on one leg into certain areas or onto certain things. Box hop down. With stabilization on one leg, box hop down and then, stabilize. The box hop down is more difficult than a box hop up. That's something that NASM will try to trick you with sometimes, but a hop up is easier than a hop down because you have that stabilization requirement on the way down is going to be more difficult than on the way up. Also, a regression for the box hop up is a box hop without a box, okay? So, a box is harder than just doing a box jump on the floor, a jump on the floor. All right, then you have, and it's all on one leg. Okay, cue variables for balanced power, 8 to 12 reps, 2 to 3 sets, controlled tempo, blah, 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 blah. We kind of went over it. Very similar to that of the core training as well. All right, here we go. Reactive training for the power phase. Ice skaters and squat jumps. The ice skaters always seem to be asked around power. So if NASM ever brings up ice skaters on a test, you have to understand that it is a power exercise. It is a side-to-side shuffling in the frontal plane, side-to-side jumping in the frontal plane from one leg to the other, just as if you were Apollo Anton Ono skating side-by-side. Don't remember Apollo Anton Ono? Remember he won like a bunch of gold medals for speed skating in the 2000 Olympics, whatever those were, 2004, 2008, 2012. Oh, wait, it was the Winter Olympics, so it was 2010. 2006, those ones, yeah. All right, anyways, Google Paulo Anton Ono right now just to see how good he is at skating. Otherwise, we can think of other skaters, I'm sure. But we won't. All right, moving to acute variables for this, very similar to what you've seen before, 8 to 12 reps, 2 to 3 sets, 0 to 6 second rest, 2 to 4 times per week, and so on. All right, and then also we have SAQ, for the power phase, or speed, agility, and quickness. Really, the SAQ is just max effort agility drills, max effort sprints, and then just more difficult patterns associated with all of those. Okay, more difficult patterns than you might see in stabilization, which you're doing a simple pattern on the agility ladder. You're now doing a very difficult pattern on a agility ladder. I'm sure you guys have seen the videos of NFL players doing these crazy patterns on the agility ladder as fast as you could possibly imagine. That's what SAQ in the power phase is about, that explosive, difficult pattern running. All right, but other exercises can be like partner mirror drills in which you're like in front of a partner and then you mimic their movements as quickly as possible. Agility ball drills and agility ladder drills. The star cone drill is one example, and then the dynamic ladder drills, just more advanced ladder patterns and speed, we'll say. And then the acute variables are 3 to 5 run-throughs, 3 to 5 sets, 0 to 90 second rest, 2 to 4 times per week, and you get a little bit more drills when you're in the power phase, so 6 to 10 drills, and then allowing maximal horizontal inertia and unpredictability. I mean, you really want to have that... you want to have your patterns mapped out, but the 6 to 10 drills is going to be more volume than you've done in the past with strength and stabilization. All right, moving to slide number 14. Now we get into the good stuff, resistance training for power. So remember, there is a superset in this phase. You need to know that there is a superset in this phase. That is always seems to be a test question, and they want you to know what is the superset in this phase about. Well, It's one to five reps of strength at 85 to 100% of 1 RM. Strength exercise, that's maximal strength, MST, followed by a power exercise performed at an explosive 10% of body weight or 30 to 45% of 1 RM weight. Okay, so typically I go 10% of body weight because 30 to 45% of 1 RM in with a medicine ball. I don't know how big of a medicine ball I can lift, more or less. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. Typically, just 10% of body weight is also recommended for this superset. Examples of this superset would be like barbell squats and squat jumps or jump squats, and then a bench press followed by a medicine ball chest pass or bench press followed by a plyometric push-up. Lots of different things. I like a deadlift followed by a depth jump is great. A power clean followed by a box jump or single leg box jumps. Just mixing that up, making you as explosive as possible in relation to the sports that you do, will benefit big time. All right, but let's get into the next slide, which is going to be the acute variables associated with this, which, guys, you have to have this memorized. This is going to be the acute variables NASM loves to ask on this. And specifically, you have 1 to 5 reps for the power phase. That's of the strength exercise and 8 to 10 reps of power exercises. So if you combine those, which NASM might ask on the test, what is the rep range for power? It's 1 to 10 reps. And that's what you should know for the test, is 1 to 10 reps. Obviously, it is a superset, so they have to break it up in the book, but it can be called 1 to 10 reps for the power phase. Then you have 3 to 5 sets. Know that. 85 to 100% for the strength exercise and 10% of body weight or 30 to 45% of 1 RM for that power exercise. I would rather have you know that for the test as 10% of body weight or 30 to 45% of 1 RM. That's more commonly asked than the superset combo of those two. Okay, so know that. The rest. I want you to know the 3 to 5 minute rest. That's it. 3 to 5 minute rest. But they say that the rest is 1 to 2 minutes between supersets and 3 to 5 minutes between circuits. I say no 3 to 5 minute rest, because what are you doing? You're recovering fully to then go explosive again after you recover fully. All right, and then 2 to 4 times per week, 4 weeks in duration. Remember, most of the power phase, or NASM typically recommends a 4 week program, so this power phase program lasts 4 weeks. And once again, it is a superset, one strength exercise, superset with one power exercise. All right, and on to slide number 16. Common mistakes and then corrective strategies for those mistakes. Too much volume. Basically, as soon as you guys are starting to do, we'll say, less powerful movements in your power phase training within that workout, like let's say you're doing some squat with box jumps, and by the fifth set, you're just really slowing down, you shouldn't continue beyond that, because then you're actually training to be slower. And that moves more into the endurance phase. So you should do only the amount of reps and sets in which you have maximal explosive work. As soon as you start to slow down and get too tired to like make the box jump safely and you know as high as you possibly can, then that's when you stop. So that's too much volume or training after too much fatigue. Not using your proper regressions, meaning if it's something's too difficult, regress it. Inappropriate exercise selection. Remember, in the power phase, you're focusing on stable movements that you're exploding with all possible intensity. So make sure that reflects that in your programming. Not cueing intensity, reminding or just having the clients do the exercise without actually saying, hey, you need to go as hard as you possibly can on this, because that's the goal, is for that. You know, you don't want someone doing a one rep max squat and just kind of cruising through it. You want to say, okay, go as hard as you can. As soon as you're down at the bottom, you push up with every single bit of power and strength to get up as fast as possible. Okay, so cue that. Also, corrective strategies for some of this is a formative assessment, basically a quick assessment of the movement proficiency during the workout to gauge progress and screen for any new area of concern. So as they do new exercises, do a quick demonstration, watch them do it. Are they ready for it? If not, maybe regress. If they can't get the hang of it, definitely regress. And also corrective strategies. If they do have any issues, muscle imbalances, foam roll and static stretch those. We put that in there. And then neuromuscular-based core training, meaning you're going to combine the whole body dynamic balance and core stability exercises, meaning that you're, you know, something like a lunge with a rotation and controlling your body through that will increase the neuromuscular based training for the core. So that rotation adds core to it, and it's a lunge exercise. So just making more difficult dynamic balance associated with core stability can work as well. All right, guys. So hopefully you got a good idea of the power phase of training and can go create a power phase training program for someone. Remember, always look up exercises on YouTube if you aren't too familiar with. Just search power exercises on YouTube, see what comes up, and you can build your sort of repertoire toolbox with YouTube. It's always great. And also make sure to, actually, as you get through the rest of this chapter, go ahead and complete the audiobook lecture, a little bit more detail in there as we go through the book, and then the assignments, assignment audio, and then take the quiz. Make sure to pass that quiz with 80% or better. And I look forward to seeing you at the audiobook lectures right down below. Cheers.